Goddess Shi, you have probably noticed that I often start my reflections with a story from my own experience. It is our living tradition's first source of inspiration, after all, quote, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder. It seems to me that the meaning I take from my life is most important for me, anyway. Some people learn by listening to dogma. They want to be told what to believe. Some people learn from reading and academic discussion, discussion of the ideas. Others do, as feminist writer Nell Morton so memorably said it, we, she said, hear each other into speech. Meaning it is as I hear my friend's stories that my own story, my own life, begins to make sense to me. Theory makes the most sense when it intersects with my life. Theory without story seems too abstract for me. So I need to tell my story, to hear others' stories, to make sense of my own life, to give it meaning. I assume that in hearing my story, you will somehow compare it to yours, and maybe, just maybe, yours will make a little more sense to you. Your story will be both different and similar to mine. Last week, you heard John's story. Today, you will hear a bit of mine. In March, you will hear Gary's story. I encourage you all to share your story of religious exploration. Quite a few years ago, in the early 80s, a friend invited me to join a women's group, not a political group or a consciousness-raising group, but a ritual group. At the time, I wasn't involved in any church anywhere. I went because I needed friends. At first, the ritual felt quite weird. I was very uncomfortable. It was too different, much different, more experiential, different kinds of songs than the usual Protestant hymn sandwich I had grown up with. Instead, we invoked the goddess and chanted simple songs like "The Earth is Our Mother," that's one of the songs we learned, for what seemed like hours. Really minutes, we would sing them just together and over until we became part of the song. And maybe because it was that indefinite period, I was unsure, uncomfortable at first. We called the spirits of the directions to form our circle. I wasn't into God stuff. This felt like God to me. Again, I wondered, what is this? The center of our ritual was usually some kind of reflective exercise. And of course, we listened to each other's stories. We learned about the goddess, about feminist theology or theology. Then came a program called Cakes for the Queen of Heaven, written by a Unitarian Universalist minister and educator, Shirley Ann Rank. Again, we told our own stories, and this was as part of some merge of this women's ritual group and a Unitarian fellowship. We started with our own genealogy on our mother's side. I am Katie, daughter of Hazel, daughter of Nell, daughter of Marie. That's as far as I know. I don't even know Marie's husband's name. It's much less than what I know about my father's side of the family. Of course, we lived near my father's family, so it was more familiar. Doesn't that seem that that's what happens so often? And then I repeated the pattern, moving thousands of miles away from my family and much closer to Al's. Patriarchy is a pattern of behavior with the beneficiaries, the males. Not all men, of course, but few, if any, women. It's as personal as our names. When I married in 1972, I did not know that a woman could keep her maiden name. 15 years later, I reclaimed it, put it back in. I wanted to be me again, all of me. I had subsumed my own identity into someone else's without even knowing it. It used to be, of course, that women were chattel, owned and controlled by their father and then their husband. It wasn't that long ago that a woman couldn't get a loan without her husband or father co-signing. I notice now that the loan officers pay more attention to who is the breadwinner than the gender of the breadwinner. This pattern of behavior and power has been written into biblical scripture, into Genesis, and reinforced by church, religion, and society. While some of those patterns have changed and changed significantly in North America, many have not. At the Olympics, have you noticed it's women's ice hockey, but it's ladies' figure skating? Women figure skaters must wear a skirt. That men may not wear tights. They must wear pants. Gender roles, too, are rigidly enforced in places. I just happen to wonder whether the questions put about the viability of women's hockey in the Olympics have anything to do with hockey being outside the old norm of what's appropriate for women to compete in. I doubt anyone's conscious of this, but I wonder. Feminist Wiccan writer Starhawk summarizes goddess religion with these 3 points: the immanence of goddess, interconnection, and community. Immanence means that the sense of divinity is within. God is not some being out there. Rather, the goddess is embodied in each of us. Each person is a manifestation of the living being of Earth. Nature, culture, and life in all of its diversity are sacred. Unitarians affirm the inherent worth and dignity of each person. While this can be interpreted in other ways, for me it feels very congruent. It goes together. Each of us is good because we have that spark of divinity within us. We are not inherently bad. Goddess religion emphasizes the interconnections among all beings of the cosmos. Starhawk speaks of the universe as one living organism. What affects one of us affects us all. Both the despair of the downtown East Side and the jubilation of the Ghanaian skier are ours, too. The joys and sorrows that we share each Sunday are another example. This means that compassion is corollary, advocacy for social justice, are a part of the goddess religion. It is not merely a private belief system. Our Unitarian faith affirms respect for the interdependent web of all existence, of which we humans are a part, not over and above, as traditional Christianity wanted us to believe. In Starhawk's version of goddess religion, and believe me, there are many versions, religion is lived in community. Rather than focusing on individual salvation or enlightenment, we are to focus on growth through intimate connections and common struggles. Staying in relationship with the folks we heartily disagree with is one of the hardest things to do. But we are called to do this, perhaps especially when it's most difficult. I am learning in my class on family systems theory that cutoff or distancing is one way that people handle anxiety or distress. Maintaining relationships when it causes us distress is challenging, but it is through our relationships that we find meaning in life. Community, according to Starhawk, includes more than people. It includes the four-leggeds and the six-leggeds and the rocks and water of the world. Imagine coming to church with beetles and butterflies, or critters, as in the animal blessing. Being environmentally conscious, then, becomes more than a scientific mandate. It is a moral mandate, a religious imperative. One is honoring divinity when treating the world properly. The covenant that we as members of Beacon strive to live within is only then a part of such a religious life. I was very attracted to the notion that I could reclaim the power within me that had been denied by patriarchal culture. Perhaps this sounds strident now, but in the 80s, this was a necessary step. Having experienced discrimination as a child and young adult, and especially having internalized the sense of being second class as a woman, I was more than ready to hear that I was a strong woman and had equal rights as the masculine half of the world. I was more than willing to think about power over, power with, and power within. More than anything else, I wanted to claim that power within that I felt had been denied me. I was even ready to consider that I was divine myself, although that took a while. Our circle operated as power with. There was no one designated to be in charge. Each of us had our gifts and time to contribute. It was a very small group, never more than 10 or so. Power was not so much control over as acknowledgement, overt acknowledgement of another's talents and gifts. Power over is that traditional kind of control, the old-fashioned boss who knows exactly where he's going and tells us. The slave driver, the all-knowing, all-powerful Father God. We worked to create a small piece of society that was a new way of being in relationship. We wanted to acknowledge and enliven the power within. I was not the only one who needed permission to come out as a strong woman. We joked about coming out of the broom closet, but it wasn't really that silly. As Starhawk puts it, quote, "We are called to take a radical leap of faith to believe that people, given the opening to dream of new possibilities with tools and visions, will create a living future." Author and feminist Nell Morton called the goddess a metaphor, a feminine goddess. Its purpose is iconoclastic, to break the exclusive hold of the traditional masculine images of the divine and therefore allow new possibilities. Feminist theology took hold of Unitarian Universalism by storm in the mid-1980s, much as it did the whole continent. Die-hard humanists hated paganism and decried such non-rational content and services. The Covenant of UU Pagans blithely invited headline speakers to the big conference, the General Assembly. Starhawk herself spoke at GA in 1989 to a packed lecture theater at that former bastion of Orthodox Trinitarian Christianity, Yale University, in New Haven, Connecticut. By 1995, there was sufficient support for the sixth source of religious inspiration to be added to our list of spiritual sources. Spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. The storm has died away. People with theistic or mystic or Christian ways of thinking and believing have felt much freer to use their language in Unitarian services all across the continent. A language of reverence has developed, and at least moderately accepted. While one friend has declared that his religion, a very humanist Unitarianism, has left him behind, many others would say it has now come around to include them. No longer is humanism, and especially an intolerant, non-inclusive secular humanism, the norm in Unitarian churches, as it used to be in many. It seems to me that the very iconoclasm of the name Goddess has broken open the traditional way of seeing God and allowed individuals to consider the notion of divinity in a wide variety of ways. We have indeed considered many names for God, as the song encourages. Theologian Carol Christ integrates process theology into her goddess theology. For her, the symbol of the goddess has the metaphorical power to upend the traditional symbolisms which perpetuate patterns of violence, hierarchy, and domination. For her, the goddess is a symbol that, quote, radiates a transforming power, calling us to change old institutions. Goddess is intelligent, embodied love as the ground of all being, end quote. both mind and body, spirit and matter. No more dualisms. Drawing on process theology, she describes the goddess as, quote, that power of loving persuasion that calls beings into transformative response, but who also suffers when beings refuse to respond and instead relate to one another with hostility. I think that I personally have integrated some of the theology of way of thinking about the goddess into my personal worldview. I love the way that the very name means there are so few preconceived notions of what this brand of divinity is or looks like or works in the world. I don't actually see it the same as either Christ or Starhawk. My own sense of divinity is so much less concrete, more abstract, less a personal kind of goddess. Starhawk writes, "It is no accident that this is the moment in history when the goddess arises again and stretches. For great as the powers of destruction may be, greater still are the powers of healing. Call her the resilient one, for she is the circle of birth, growth, death, and regeneration. We, as cells of her body, if we listen to our deepest hearts, cannot help but serve the cycles of renewal. May our dreams and visions guide us, and may we find the strength to make them real. Blessed be."